Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, April 7th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the internet at whyagain.org. If you go to that website, look for the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner. Click on that. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional state into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file that you can click and download, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through how to use that tool. Or given testimonials about the benefits of using that tool in their lives. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to click on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments or questions or testimonials or answers or refutations. And if you have any of those to share with us, give us a call at 563-999-3581. And once you call that number and press 1, it will put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will see it, turn on your microphone, and announce you by your area code. We are sitting here on a Thursday. It's morning here in the Midwest, and that means we have a support group happening tonight at 6:30 p.m., and that's available to anybody through Zoom. If you have an interest in joining us or you know someone who would be interested in that, all the information you need for joining is available at mindshiftersacademy.org website. That website's getting more frequent updates than normal since we started the Way of Mastery with commentary, because now we've got a page for the Way of Mastery lessons read fairly close to verbatim, the first 12 lessons. We have another page for the Way of Mastery lessons with commentary that contain the shows that we've been doing since January 10th. And there's another page that's just only got four files on it right now, and it's highlights of these shows that have been happening since January 10th. And recently I included the show from December 30th of 2015, which just kind of evolved, and without any planning, it developed into a review of Lesson 5 of The Way of Mastery, woven into Dr. Michael Rice's work and Guy Finley's work and Dale Allen Hoffman's work. So those are offered as a resource, along with the archives of this show for the past 11-plus years. And that's available through the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. And the actual full-blown pick any show you want for the last 11-plus years is available on the whyagain.org website. If you go to whyagain.org and click on the picture of the microphone, that will take you to a page where you can get access to the archives for the last 11-plus years. So, yesterday when we left off, we were moving into Lesson 8, and I had been called to do that because of the work that was happening in the support group on Tuesday, that someone had requested that we listen to Lesson 9. And Lesson 8 and Lesson 9 dovetail beautifully and talk about a different aspect, another way to think about the truth of how each and every one of us is always creating our experience of life. And Lesson 8 says we do that creating our experience of life by the thoughts that we choose and pour our mind energy into. Another way to talk about it is to say by the pebbles that we drop, fill clear pool of our awareness. And I was reading, I'd gotten pretty much through the first page of Lesson 8 yesterday. And I really find great benefit. I frequently come to this image of the still clear pool of awareness and me recognizing that every time I pour my mind energy into a specific thought, it's like dropping a pool or a pebble into this pool of awareness. It is creating a disruption. It is creating a shockwave. It is creating ripples that extend out from me and interact with the world and the people around me, and it's going to come back to me. So I'm going to go back and just read through this first page again. Dropping pebbles into the pool of awareness is the title of this lesson. And the text reads, as always, I come forth as your equal, to abide with you, to walk with you, to communicate with you. And I come from that mind, capital M, mind, and that heart, capital H, heart, which we eternally share as one. That mind, the Christ mind, the one mind, which is alone the reality of our shared creatorship, sonship. Everyone, to be a son back then didn't mean male. It meant an offspring of anything that was created from a source of creation. Our shared creatorship, our shared existence. And as always, I come forth in joy and also with humility, for I cannot join with anyone unless they provide the space within their consciousness and bid me enter therein. You can reject this lesson. You can reject the companionship of other entities that would like to support you on your journey. You can reject the curriculum as long as you'd like to reject it. You can't choose another curriculum. There's nothing else to learn. There is no other life. There is no other flow of creation. It's all one thing. The text goes on to say, therefore, understand well that when I come to abide with you, I come with a humility born of the recognition of the great mystery that was given, that has given you your existence, that mystery that I have called Abba, Father, Father, Mother, God, Creator. And why is this so? Because you have not come forth from some mechanical, unthinking force. You have come forth from pure intelligence. You have come forth from pure love, the pure energy of creation. You have come forth from a source beyond all comprehension. Your intellectual mind can't even begin to comprehend your source. You have come forth from the radiance of a light, capital L light, so bright that the world cannot see it or contain it. You have come forth from that which alone is eternally real. Because you have come forth from it, you are one with it always. This means that you abide in a relationship created to creator, offspring or child to parent, that is so intimate, a bond so deep, that it cannot be broken at any time. As a wave that arises from an ocean cannot be separated from the ocean itself, so too in each and every moment in your experience, do you abide in a union so powerful, so mysterious, so intimate, and so immediate that your mind cannot comprehend it. This union connects you as the created with the mystery beyond comprehension that contains every drop of wisdom and intelligence necessary to create consciousness itself. Consciousness, the power to be aware, the power to choose, is what you truly are. If this source, this mystery, can birth forth the most fundamental aspect of creation, does it not deserve to be called something with reverence? Abba, or Father, or Mother, that which creates like unto itself? Can you then begin to feel, to know, not just as an intellectual idea, but as the lived reality, a knowingness, that if you are aware in this very moment, if you have awareness, if you have consciousness, it is because you are one with the source of all creation, and you cannot be separated from it in any way or at any time. So there's this truth that is true always. There is this life experience, and we can get distracted from it. We can pretend it's not true. How many times have you had the television on and you were in the middle of a show that you really liked, and then something happens, it catches your attention, and it was on, the lights and the sounds were bouncing out of the screen and around the room, but you got distracted and you don't remember what they said, and you reach for the remote and you want to rewind it. That's the show was on. You're here. You are connected to your source, and yet you can get distracted from that reality, that actuality, that capital T truth. We do it all the time. Our culture trains us to do it. Our culture teaches us to focus on things other than our true nature. And we've been conditioned quite thoroughly. What's one of the things that pulls us out of that direct experience of the flow of life and our connection to the one mind and our intimate connection with the sources that have given us birth and given rise to us. What's one thing that does it? Fear. Fear, as we have said many times, is like a contraction. Again, if you were to imagine a wave arising from the ocean and then going into contraction because it thinks it is separated from its source, if that could happen, that contraction would literally squeeze the life, the very flowing waters, out of that wave. The wave can't possibly continue when its very life force has been squeezed from it. Does it not then become just mere drops of water fading from view, only to dissolve back into the ocean itself? The radiance of the wave is lost, never to be seen again. If it were possible for the wave of your consciousness to truly have its life force squeezed out of it, and they're saying here it is not possible, but if it were possible, you too would fade away as droplets returning to the ocean, never to be remembered or seen again. Listen, and listen well, that would be death. And in reality, you are alive always. Even when you've identified yourself with the great contraction that fear is, your fears have never been able to squeeze out of you the great life force, the great reality, the great gift of awareness. You have therefore never ceased to be. There has never been a time that you have not existed, and there will never be a time when you will cease to be. The body may cease to be, but the life force that is you, the consciousness that is you, will always be. You are therefore very much like a wave that has begun to arise out of an unseen ocean, and as it gains momentum, it moves across the surface of the planet. Like that wave, you are in continual movement. Moving where? You're moving into a forever extension of your awareness itself, into a forever extension of whatever you choose to pick up along the way and make part of yourself, into a forever extension that will carry you into the experience or the fruits of the very thoughts you've held on to as your own. Therefore, understand well, right now, in this lived moment, wherever you are, whatever you are experiencing, all that you see, all that you feel, all that you know, all that you seek to avoid, all the things you value and devalue, all these things are contained within your awareness. For if they are not found there, they do not exist for you. Therefore, look upon that which resides within your awareness, within your consciousness. What are the things that you know that you know? What are the things that you would avoid? What are the feelings that you have not explored? What are the objects, the people, the places, the values that you strive for that seem to thrill even the cells of the body? What is the body itself, if not that which arises within your awareness? Look at the planet around you. Look at every object in your room. Look at every thought that you choose to think. Look at the perceptions and ideas that you defend so vociferously. Look at the thoughts and the feelings of others that make you cringe or wish to withdraw from them. All of these things abide within you like the very power or life force of the wave that has arisen from the ocean. All of these things you picked up along the way. And the way has been very long and varied indeed. If you can imagine never ceasing to exist, which of course you can't, but they're calling you to try and take the intellect and tune it differently. If you can imagine never ceasing to exist, it means that you have been as a wave of awareness passing through every time frame, every planetary system and every dimension of creation. Along the way, one thing has remained constant. That one thing is that you have been in constant relationship with all of creation. Oh yes, you may select out a few people, a few objects, a planet, a dimension, and focus all of your attention there. Attention is nothing more than the decision of what you are going to use the power of your awareness to focus on. It seems that you have excluded everything else, but that is like an optical delusion of consciousness, for in truth, you cannot be separated from your Creator and all of creation. While it is very true that you have selected out aspects of creation to focus your attention on, yet underneath that selection, in the depth of the wave that is unseen by the physical eye, unseen by your conscious awareness or your day-to-day mind, in that depth you have remained in perfect communication with all of creation. You are, therefore, in relationship with all created things. And there is a communication that occurs without ceasing. Imagine being able to look into the air of your planet and to literally see the radio waves, the television waves, and all the electrical waves that keep bouncing back and forth across your planet. This is what you swim in daily. Your consciousness pervades this field of vibrations. So we've talked at different times in the first seven lessons about we've been bringing in things like David E. Martin's book where he's, the title of it is Lizards Eat Butterflies. And he brings our awareness to the fact that while we have five cranial nerves that are associated with each of the five senses, we have 12 total cranial nerves. What if body, this physiology, this energy system, this consciousness was designed for us to develop the capacity to see, feel, hear, but then sense in ways that aren't touch or sight or sound or taste or smell, to experience fully other aspects and other energies and other connections? What if we can begin developing our awareness in those other areas with the simple practice of stepping into what this book calls divine ignorance and asking to be shown in each moment, waking up to understand every moment, I don't know everything, and so whatever it is I think I know is either only partially true or perhaps even completely false by definition. So I wonder what I might learn. I wonder what I might experience. I wonder what might be out there around on the periphery of my sight and my hearing and my sensing with touch and taste and smell. I wonder how I might be a blessing in this next moment. I wonder how when the day plan that I had goes completely off the rails, I wonder how this is going to lead to something far better than I could have imagined. I wonder how I can keep myself present, conscious, in this active awareness of my true nature as love, and ask to be shown, ask to be taught in this moment. I wonder what I might see, feel, hear, experience in ways that go beyond hearing and sight and felt sense and touch, taste and smell. What might I get introduced to about the hidden parts of my mind that are creating any resistance and upset? How might I step back into the flow of allowance and acceptance and surrender and trust and embracing life in all of its fullness in this moment? And what might I open myself up to that is beyond anything anybody has ever suggested to me, taught me about, trained me to experience, conditioned me to fight for or against? What might I learn? How might I open myself to a life that's far bigger than anything my intellect can contain? That's what this series of tools in the Christ Mind work are suggesting for us, inviting us into. So we're about halfway through page 95 on lesson 8. It says, you only experience what you have chosen to create. Now, this is probably the fourth or fifth or 12th heading or stating of that phrase, of that observation, in this book so far, and we're only on lesson 8. The title of this section, you only experience what you have chosen to create. The text reads, you are the one who selects out of what you are going to be aware of, what you are calling into your lived experience. You select what is going to make an imprint upon you. A lot of things. It's like I was talking about, if I'm watching a movie or I'm watching a TV show, and I get distracted, and I just miss parts of the dialogue, or I miss a whole action scene, or I miss one of those times where we're getting, you know, the narrator is breaking the third wall or whatever, and I'm focusing on the snack I'm eating, or I get distracted by my phone vibrating or something. We select out of all the things that are going on around us what we're going to focus on, to be aware of, and what imprint, impact it's going to have on us. We choose the interpretation for these life events and this flow of creative energy in, through, as, and around us. Imagine then, it says in the second paragraph here, imagine then a pool of clear, still water. Into that pool, you drop a solitary pebble. From the pebble, there radiates waves. This is what is occurring constantly in the field of your wave of awareness. As you have attracted to yourself certain persons, places, things, objects, and above all, thoughts, beliefs, and perceptions, what you've truly done is you've dropped them like little pebbles into the still clear pool of your vast and eternal awareness. What you experience are the effects or the ripples of those pebbles. They literally join with the other ripples that you have created, and all these ripples, as they move out and touch one another and come back to you, this is the field of creation that makes up your physical third-dimensional reality. You are, therefore, never experiencing anything except what you have chosen to create. How are you creating it? Through your selection of the pebbles that you have dropped into the field of your awareness. You literally never experience a solitary thing. You do not experience objects. What you experience is the effect of a thought or a belief in objects. You never experience another person, for they are also made up of a whole web of vibrations. And this is just a rehashing, a repeat of what was in lesson 3. We only experience the perceptions our mind creates about our interactions with other people. And then our mind tries to convince us that the pictures or perceptions it creates are the same thing as the other person. And as it said in Lesson 3, every time we create a negative perception about another person, instantly we come to believe they have caused an upset in us, and in that moment, our mind, faster than we can track with thought, does this thing called projection, and it shows us a picture in our mind of that person causing our pain or fear or sadness. The moment before that happens, we chose to deny the first axiom. And the first axiom is basically what they're talking about here in this Lesson 8. You only experience what you've chosen to create. You never experience a single solitary thing. You don't experience a ball or a car or a desk or a lamp. You don't experience objects. What you experience is the effect of the thoughts or beliefs that you choose about those objects, or that they are real, or that they are separate from you, or that they don't vibrate and move, and that they're not part of the creative flow. Whatever those beliefs are that you choose, whatever thoughts you pour your mind energy into, that's what you experience. You don't experience the outside world. And then it says, very clearly, you never experience another person, because the other person, they are also made up of a whole web of vibrations. Dr. Michael Rice talks about this a lot in his lectures. He used to talk about it a lot more. But, you know, if the antenna that is your eye could keep up with the rate of vibration of the energies in front of you, you wouldn't see a person, you wouldn't see a car, you wouldn't see a desk, you would see energy fields within energy fields within energy fields. Everything is energy and everything is in motion. The text goes on to say, you could say that each person, each object, is really a field of relationships, unique and seemingly different from you, but a web of relationships nonetheless. For what child can be separated from their parents, from their cultural background, from the unique experiences they've had as they've interacted with the webs of relationship that have been around them since the moment of their conception? What kitten can be separated and singled out from the matrix of its mother and father? What leaf on a tree is separate from the temperature of the air, the quality of the water, and the nutrients that come to it from the very soil of the earth? Everything is a web of relationship. All webs are in relationship with all other webs, and they become grander and grander and grander ad infinitum, at infinity. You are a web of relationships out of which you have selected certain pebbles, whether they be thoughts or perceptions or experiences, and you have dropped them into the still clear pool of your awareness in order to create even more ripples. Then you've chosen which ones will have the greatest value for you. And these, the ones that you choose as to have the greatest value for you, these ripples lock you in to, they lock into your being, and they become your emotional field. The emotional field is the first level of crystallization of the body. Now, I don't know that this is true at any absolute level, because remember, all of this is just words trying to point us towards an experience that goes beyond words every heartbeat. So what does that mean? That the emotional field is the first level of the crystallization of the body. What do those words mean? What does the word body mean? What does crystallization mean? What does level mean? So just play with this. What's being said here is, then you have chosen which thoughts, which ripples, which energies will have the greatest value for you. When you choose a value and you hold on to it and you pour your belief into it, you lock into your being those energies and they become your emotional field. The text goes on to say, from the emotional field, a further crystallization creates the appearance of a physical form. It is that which you push around the planet in your very temporary third-dimensional form of creation, of attention. And as you're doing that, all around you and just beneath the level of your conscious daily awareness, you remain in communication with all webs of relationship throughout all dimensions of creation. It is for this reason that an inspiring thought can come suddenly to you and penetrate your daily awareness. And you wonder, quote, well, where did that thought come from? Close quotes. Or suddenly a picture appears in your mind. It could be of anything. It could be a man and a woman making love, a man and a man making love, a child playing in a park, a dolphin, or a picture of a conflict of war. Where did it come from? Because you live in perfect communication and you are like a grand field of energy in which all webs of relationship are reverberating constantly, you actually have access to the complete entirety of creation. And this entirety of creation is not limited to what is occurring now, as you understand time. You have available to yourself everything, which you would call the past and the future. These things are available to you at all times. There is not one of you who has not experienced this for yourself. Perhaps you suddenly thought of a friend, and then the telephone rang, and you knew it was that friend. I believe Dr. Michael Rice was telling a story of this just yesterday on his portion of the show. He was doing some kind of still point breathing thing, and he had some kind of visualization about his ancestors, and he just he spoke something out loud about how, yes, he will accept responsibility for it, and his son calls his phone instantly and says, hey, Dad, I want some help with this genealogy work I'm doing. You believe a story like that? Believe it or not believe it. Everybody has had these weird, what Jung would call synchronicities, these experiences that Jung and others, great teachers, would tell us, they're always happening. You are always connected. You don't often notice them. You don't often slow down. You don't often live in the question. You don't often ask to be shown. And yet these things are constantly happening. That's what this book is saying. There is not one of you who has not experienced this for yourself. You remain connected to everything in creation at all times. You may be choosing to focus your conscious awareness on a few precious bits that are most important to you, your television show, your true love, your fancy stereo, your car, your career, your body, whether you love it or you hate it, and yet you remain constantly in communication with the entirety of creation. And it's not even limited in space and time to what's happening right now. And it says, so perhaps you suddenly thought of a friend, and then the telephone rang, and you knew it was that friend. It makes no sense to your casual third-dimensional plane, your causal third-dimensional plane, the way you believe everything works with Newtonian physics, and this desk is solid and my hand is solid and that's why they can't pass through each other. There's no way that my thinking about that person who lives on the other side of the continent could possibly affect them. This is just a coincidence that they're calling me right now. It makes no sense in your causal third dimensional plane. But because underneath all of it, even though your conscious mind was busy making breakfast and wondering about which stocks to buy or sell or which perfume to put on the body, even though that's happening at the conscious level, you remain in perfect communion. It is why when there is a deep resonance between friends, and they may be separated by thousands of miles, all of a sudden you know that they need you to call them. You feel a sense of concern, or maybe they just stubbed their toe, but you pick up the vibration. You all live this. At some level, you all know this. There is no secret about it. What I would seek then to attract your attention to is one of the pebbles that has been dropped into the field of your awareness, which is generally true for virtually everyone involved in the third dimensional experience called physicality. Imagine a sentence being dropped from a vast height and it's picking up speed until it strikes the still clear pool of your awareness and sends a major ripple out, creating a vibration through you. The sentence is simply this, and we've all been conditioned into this. We've all had this in one way or another, quote, beaten into us, close quotes. Here's the quote. It is not possible for me to have complete mastery over which pebbles are dropped into my awareness, for I am at the mercy of the vibrational field set up by the ripples of all the thoughts and webs of relationship in which I swim constantly, close quotes. Imagine this as a major boulder dropped from a great height into your awareness, because we have been trained to believe that, quote, it is not possible for us to have complete mastery over those thoughts that occur, those pebbles that are dropped into our awareness. We have been trained to believe we are at the mercy of the vibrational field that's set up by history and our past and our generations, the ripples of all the thoughts and webs of relationships that we swim in constantly. And the text goes on to let us know that that perception is absolutely true only as long as we choose to believe it. This is critical in this work. I can create the experience, the perception, the reality in my mind that that's true, that I can't choose my thoughts, that I can't choose the effect of my thoughts, that I can't choose the effects of the ripples of my past thoughts and my family of origin and the culture that I live in, that I can't choose the effects of that as they ripple back to me. That's absolutely true as long as I hold on to believing it's true. As long as I cherish that belief, that will create my experience of life. The text goes on to say in the next sentence, that perception or belief is also absolutely laughable and powerless as soon as you choose to acknowledge that this is so. You have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. And it is only the focus of that conscious awareness that creates your experience of life in each new present moment. Nothing else ever has, nothing else ever could, nothing else ever will. Imagine how you have been trained by your culture to believe you are a victim. Imagine all the various ways that we have been trained to believe we are a victim of fate. We're a victim of circumstances. These phrases are woven into our language and our culture. All of the different forms of the belief that it is not possible for me to have complete mastery over which pebbles are dropped into my awareness, because I am at the mercy of the vibrational field that was set up by all of the ripples of the thoughts and the webs of relationship that I was born into, that happened in my culture, that happened in my family, these things that I'm swimming in constantly. And the text wants us to know that perception is absolutely true, as long as we choose to believe it. And there's that line from the Course in Miracles that says, these things hold on and create our lives as long as the thought that gave birth to it is being cherished by us. As long as we choose to believe it, that's going to create our perception. It's also going to be, in the next moment, absolutely laughable and powerless to affect us as soon as we acknowledge the truth of it, which is the truth that is true always, which is you remain as you were created to be, which is you and you alone create your experience of life. The text goes on to ask, what is the point of that? It's simply this. If you would choose to awaken wholly, completely, totally, if you would choose not just to be a wave that has mysteriously arisen from the ocean, if you would choose to be more than just another soul that has arisen from the mind of the Creator and now is somehow crashing about through the universe, if that would be your choice, then it is absolutely necessary to own as your own the pebble that drops into the still clear pool of your awareness, and to own it with this thought, quote, I am the one who chooses the effects I experience. I alone interpret all neutral relationships or experiences. I alone place the value upon objects, things, thoughts, and belief systems. I alone am the literal creator of my moment-to-moment experience. And if you choose that, the text hopes that you can see that changes everything. You step into the experience of the process that has been happening all your life anyway, that you are creating your experience of life. So, getting near the end of our show, and I just saw a note from Jeannie Rice. And so I'm going to take a moment here and say she is unable to join us, and she's requesting that I play a workshop as the second hour. And I will say we have a few minutes if anybody wants to have a comment or a question before I step into the second portion of our show today. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. I'm going to stop the reading for there for now and leave the phone lines open if somebody has a comment or a question. If people want to just sit with the energy of that reading, that's fine too. And we can move on to our second hour. Area code 541. Is this Linda?
Yes, it is. I'm on Larry's phone this morning. Mine died. And I just had a thought and an offer for you, Dr. Tim. I am continuing to read Lizards Eat Butterflies. And I would like to offer this possibility that I think if you and David Martin were to engage with each other, it would be an absolute opening for both of you, because what you're saying with different words is what I hear, and I might be over-interpreting his work, what David Martin is saying. And one of the things that I have discovered by being in this tiny community is that if I want to thrive in my community, I am going to have to be open to all points of view. That doesn't mean I condone them. That doesn't mean I accept them. I mean that I embrace, what's the word I want, that I make them my own, that I believe that they are so. That's what I'm trying to say. But the greeting and the welcoming and the embracing and the accepting and the allowing are so much opening me up that I wanted to share that possibility for you. And if your resistance comes up or if David's resistance comes up, oh, what a fantastic field for further expansion for both of you. I just think it's delightful. And that's just my offering, and it might be a hoot. It might be absolutely ridiculous, but I needed to share that with you out of the very bottom part of my heart.
All right. Well, from the bottom of your heart to my ears, I take that in. Thank you. I have a very similar experience reading that book and listening to some of his, not all of his, but some of his videos that were on YouTube, and I thought this would be fabulous, and I started sharing his work with a variety of people, including the gentleman who wrote the book that he Perception, Seeing is Not Believing kind of thing. I think that's the title of his book. And they now do live Facebook present videos together. And so they made a great connection. And I came to see very, very clearly right after that we don't have enough in common that we would be good partners. He's an intellectual powerhouse that goes into things and holds details and does deep dive research into things that I don't do. And so it was great that he hooked up with I'm trying to come up with his name, with the gentleman that wrote that other book. And I was just looking over at my bookshelf to see if his book was there, but it must be at home. Purpura, James Purpura is the gentleman. And I was, just as you, I was so enamored with the stuff I was reading in Lizards Eat Butterflies and some of the videos from David E. Martin that I started sending it to all kinds of people that I thought might be interested and have good collaboration with him. And so I share your enthusiasm for the stuff that's in the book, and there's more to the person than just what's in the book.
Oh, for sure. I agree with you. In fact, I was thinking exactly, I was relating that you've just said to exactly what we're reading here today. And it's amazing. And also, I have this visualization that seems to work for me because, as I shared with you, I've been through a lot of different spiritual paths as a seeker. And what I've realized for myself, my visual, is that this whole creation is a smorgasbord, and that each one of us gets to choose what entree we're going to eat out of it, what desserts, what salads, what side dishes and salsas and all of that. And each one of us are going to do a different one. I just had a vision of a potential that would be absolutely transformative for all concerned. And what I tend to be, I've realized, is I tend to be a communicator in relation to connecting people with people, or things with things, or like you said, details with details, and creating this web of understanding from the bottom up.
Well, and you might enjoy
sometimes that's a white rabbit hole.
And you might enjoy James Purpura's book.
Purpura?
The book is titled, it's His name is Purpura.
Yeah, P-U-R-P-U-R-A.
And the title is Perception, Seeing is Not Believing. That's the title of the book. And his name is P-U-R-P-U-R-A.
You know, it reminds me of a Wayne Dyer book. I'll get it out yet. When he wrote something that said, "You'll see it when you believe it." So
yep,
it should
there's
be
a lot
an
of overlap in some of those and some of those teachings. So
very
and
good.
He's got he has a website, powerful-u.com. And they put their stuff out under that Powerful U, powerful-u.com. And
cool.
James' book, I have referred to a number of people. And he had quite a history of, careening around in the world, being told he was stupid, having learning disabilities, having lots of run-ins with the law and nearly dying and going to jail and all of that, and then coming out on the other side and now being a millionaire and being a leader for people and inspiration and training and spirituality and whatnot, practicality. So I will leave it with that. I thank you for the call and
thank
the suggestion.
You.
Blessings.
Thank you
I
so much.
I will mute you and remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love and everything else is false. And please send your thoughts of blessing and healing to Jeannie Rice. And here's our second hour.
What exists is energy in form. And relative to this integrated energy system that we call a body-mind unit, there are two qualities. There's integrative energy, that which is over on the left side of the board, and disintegrative energy, that which is over here on the right side of the board. Now, we've had the experience over the last 2 years. Our granddaughter came into the world just a little over 2 years ago. And, you know, it was this little baby, little structure. And you know something? She doesn't look like that at all today, 2 years later. And she doesn't look at all like she looked at, like she looked at a month or 2 months or 3 months or 4 months or five or six or 10 or 20. And what you have to conclude, if you get out of the dullness of incapacitated perception, what you notice is this form is a piece of plastic. It's in a state of becoming. And it becomes according to the energetic patterns in which we engage. If we engage in these things on the right side of the board, hostility and fear, grief, rage, anger, sadness, jealousy, revenge, then we're continuously putting into the cells that are storing that particular energy, and my offering is that every cell in your structure functions as a brain cell, functions to store information. And so we're literally changing the plastic nature of every cell and overall the whole structure of this thing we call a body-mind unit. And we're laying that on top of, you know, we can't just step in, or at least normally, I think we get to a level of power where we might be able to, but we don't just step in and make an instant change in a whole structure. Why? Well, there are 1,000 generations of that mind energy becoming flesh within each of our structures. You know, we don't have to direct its becoming, it's happening. But as we grow in awareness and choose to engage in energetic patterns, we start to direct its becoming. This side of the board, we direct it into the disease process. This side of the board, we direct it into health and wholeness and higher states of being. And if we lived on a planet where 7.5 people woke up every morning, 7.5 billion people, pardon me, woke up every morning realizing that this is who they are, how different would our creative process be? If we didn't have people playing these games, if we weren't playing these games, how different would this piece of plastic look for each of us? What would it be capable of? And as I say, when we engage in that mind energy and it lands on the cell, that mind energy, when it's of a disintegrative nature, the cell says, ouch, it informs us that the quality of our creative process is off base. But what do we do? Well, what our culture has taught most of us to do is blame somebody else for that. Have you ever said this to somebody? You made me really mad. You hurt me. You really have a problem. You ever said that to somebody? And the question I like to ask is, if they're the one with the problem, why are you the one with the pain? That doesn't make any sense. If they're the one with the problem, they'd be the one with the pain. But if you're in pain and you think somebody else has got a problem, you've got a problem. Now, we have a definition for the act of thinking or speaking as though something outside of you is causing what's happening inside of you. And that's called denial. So denial is the act of thinking or speaking as though something outside of us is causing something inside of us to happen. Now, something outside of us can cause something that's inside of us to move or intensify in its movement, but it can't cause that energy to be there. It has to be there in the first place. But when we live in this game of denial, you know, whenever I feel this way, I talk about them or somebody or anybody. What happens is that in order to pretend that my feelings aren't coming from the interaction of my mind energy and my cells, I have to hide that whole process from myself. I literally have to dissociate from that process. And I have to hallucinate. I have to generate a worldview, a perceptual construct that tells me that the problem is really out there. And of course, one of my favorite tongue-in-cheek lines, which many of you have used many times, is, if you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people, how is it that you're the only one that was there every time? Sooner or later, we have to acknowledge that we're engaged in our own lives. But if we spend our whole lives in denial, you made me mad, you made me sad, you made me angry, you hurt me, that upset me, they disturbed me, then we have a device called a mind that continuously constructs the world we see as though that was true. And what that means is that the real cause of what we're experiencing, we have to dissociate from. And if you were involved in this work back in the early days, you remember that I used to write on the board, deny, suppress. And it totally changed the work when I was given this instruction. I mean, I had specific instructions that were given internally from Rukka that said, Michael, no, it's not suppress. It's not merely hiding something from yourself. It's locking it away and throwing away the key. Once you're in an arena where you're in denial, you made me mad, your mad is no longer yours to change. So guess what? You now have a life sentence of mad. Anybody and everybody that can trigger that into activity can seem to make you mad. Why can they make you mad? Because mad is there. And if mad is there, it's an energy. And if you pushed it down 1,000 times, there's a very intense high energy wave radiating out from you that says to all the world on an energetic level, hey world, is there anybody that knows how to make me mad? Have you ever noticed there's never a shortage of volunteers? Why is that? Because life abhors you being diseased. Life doesn't want you dead. So life has been structured, it seems, so that if you are holding to a dis-ease energy and you've dissociated from it, someone's going to show up, and that happens through the law of resonance. Someone is going to receive the energetic invitation to come to your life and do to you exactly what you never wanted to have done. And if you tell them what's wrong with them and you get rid of them and you go away and you take the geographic cure, you'll find somebody else and somebody else and somebody else. I feel so blessed the universe reserved the title of my book for me. Why is this happening to me again? Because virtually everybody in the universe has asked the question. And, you know, probably the greatest atrocity done to us as human beings down through the ages and that we've bought into is that we've had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. Nobody told us that. They told us all kinds of crazy things, but they didn't tell us that through the energetic patterns we engage in, we create our own cellular health and diseases. We create everything that shows up. We literally create the way this piece of plastic called a body-mind unit unfolds and becomes either toward disease or toward health. It depends on what the predominant resonant energy is in your structure. So for people who live in this state of denial, this state where it's all everybody else's fault, they hold all of these causes within themselves, but they press those causes down, hide them from themselves, and by so doing, intensify them every time they have to press it down, and therefore send out a signal that gets even stronger and stronger and stronger. You know, imagine that I've got a 3-foot diameter spring. It sits here on the floor and it stands 3 feet high. Can that spring do anything sitting there on the floor? Not at all. But what happens if I push down on it and lock it? And I push down on it and lock it. And I push down on it and lock it. What happens after years of doing that and I let the lock off? Whew, a lot of power stored in the spring. If I've been spending years and years and years telling everybody else why they're the problem in my life, I'm pushing down that energy, adding energy and information to it, and by so doing, I'm setting up literally an attractive energy field that will resonate or pull somebody into my life to do it to me again. So when I live life that way, when that's the game that I play, the things that I most don't want to deal with are literally stored in brain cells. When I talk about building brain cells in this work, I'm not talking about building new physical structure. I'm talking about the fact that every cell in the structure is designed to store information, literally to store frequencies. So every cell can hold energetic patterns and therefore function as a brain cell. When there are certain brain cells that I don't want to deal with, things that I'm in denial about, I push those things down and hide them. I intensify them, and by so doing, I set up a high energy wave. Now, I didn't know at the time how important a piece of information this was going to be way back, and this goes back probably 35 or 36 years ago. I used to keynote at a conference called Global Science out in Colorado, and one year, a gentleman named Marcel Vogel came to the conference. Marcel was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM. He was the only non-degreed scientist that IBM ever had on their payroll. And the reason he was non-degreed was because he was self-educated and nobody could teach him anything. At the age of 11, Marcel invented chemical light. You know, you go to a football game and they've got these light sticks, and you break the glass tubes inside the plastic and the chemicals mix and they light up. Well, that was Marcel's invention. He invented that at 11. His family didn't have the money. Marcel patented it himself. If your computer works, guess why? Marcel invented the magnetic coating on the plates of your hard drive that allows your hard drive to store information. That's the kind of mind that Marcel had. And what he did this particular year is he brought a thing called a Delaware camera. It was created by a man out of England named George Delaware. This camera is a little different than your average camera. Normally, you click the shutter, the aperture opens, light energy comes in, it's registered on the photographic plate, you develop it, you've got a picture. Not so with the Delaware camera. In between the aperture and the photographic plate, there's a tuning mechanism. So you can literally tune the camera, somewhat like a TV set or a radio, as to what frequencies it receives. And so what Marcel was able to do with this camera was he was able to attune it to the frequency of waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. And what Marcel was able to do was to take pictures of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. So whatever we're holding in the way of mind energy within our structures, from our own lives or from our genes, we're literally sending out a composite of frequencies continuously. And because the universe is governed by the law of resonance, now, the law of resonance, simply stated, says this: when two energy systems are in tune or in harmony with each other, there's an interchange of energy between them when one system is amplified above the other. You probably remember from physics class in high school. You took a middle C tuning fork, you hit it on a desk, and you put it in front of a second middle C tuning fork. The second middle C tuning fork was not moving. But when you put the first energized tuning fork in front of it, the second tuning fork started to move. It's called resonance, transfer of information. So notice that this tuning fork is moving, and through resonance, that one starts to move. Resonance creates motion. You might think about let's imagine you've got a baby grand piano, and you have two of them, and you open the top of the two baby grand pianos. Now, there are hundreds and hundreds of keys in each piano. But if I go over to one of those pianos, and I hit the middle C, and I go look into the second piano, there are going to be a bunch of strings vibrating in that second piano. Guess which ones? Only the ones that are keyed to middle C are going to be moving in that second piano. So resonance creates motion. Now, in the human realm, my offering is, resonance adds another piece to the puzzle. And that is, resonance creates motion toward. So, you know, I hit middle C on this piano. The other piano isn't going to get up and crawl up on top of it. It's not going to create motion toward. But in the human realm, when I set up a frequency, those who are in resonance with that frequency are going to tend to be drawn into my space. And if there's something that I have denied and dissociated from 1,000 times, and it's deeply hidden away in the darkest recesses of my mind, I don't even know it's there. But having pushed it down 1,000 times, it's got a pretty powerful wave coming out of it. Now, if this person has the matching bag of garbage, if this person has the brain cells and the behaviors that match what I've denied and dissociated from, unless they are very conscious, they will tend to be directed by that energy wave. That energy wave will resonate these brain cells in them. Those brain cells will fire, constitute their, what they would call their conscious thought and behavior, and they're going to tend to do a behavior toward us. Guess what the behavior is likely going to be? Let's see if that's true. Has anybody ever gone into somebody's space totally committed to being loving, nurturing and caring, and all of a sudden found yourself functioning like a mad banshee? What happened? Well, here's my offering. You went in totally committed to being loving and nurturing and caring, but their high energy waves set something else in motion in you. It resonated your mad banshee. And when your mad banshee started to move, that took over your behavior, and there you were doing it to them again. That's how the why is this happening to me again principle occurs. And guess what? Even if you didn't do it, they're going to see you do it. Well, Michael, that doesn't make any sense. Oh, yeah, it does when you know how the mind operates. Because here's what's going to happen. When they do that behavior, when they bounce off of that high energy wave in you and do that behavior, they're going to resonate those very brain cells that you've denied and dissociated from. When those brain cells start to fire, they're going to create a perceptual construct that will be projected from those brain cells, and you're going to show up in their mind. Literally, they will see a body that they call you in their mind with and made up of the threads of energy of what you denied and dissociated from. So they're going to show up in your mind with your problem. Is that you're going to see that it's their problem. It's going to be really clear to you. But then notice, you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people. and you're the only one that was there every time. This is an internal process that comes about as a result of denial and dissociation. So what happens when we deny and dissociate, this is the energetic pattern that occurs. And then when those brain cells fire, and we live in a culture, you know, psychology tends to tell us that projection is taking something that's inside of you and putting it outside of you. That's not projection. That's externalization. Projection is when I take brain cells I've denied and dissociated from, and I generate perception out of it. I generate the picture world that I see. Now, it's interesting, and of course, we've been teaching this for decades, but a couple of years ago, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago now, we came across some research that was done by the CIA. If you go to CIA.gov, you can download a book. God knows how many taxpayer dollars they spent on it. It was called The Study of Human Intelligence. And there's a chapter in it on perception. They're studying how perception works. And here's their bottom line conclusion. You can go to the CIA website and download this book free. What it says is, the mind does not record reality, the mind generates reality. This perceptual world, the world that you see, is a generated world. And as a generated world, it is a construct of your mind. And until you interrupt what's at the root of the way your mind constructs the world that you see, you will tend to be stuck in this pattern of denial, dissociation, and then projection. Now, our culture tells us that we have a pair of windows that we all get to look out of and see what's going on in the world. That is probably the biggest lie you've ever been told. You do not have a set of windows that look out into the world. It's not possible. You have an antenna. It's called the eye. It's a frequency receiving device. It receives frequencies based in light energy. Light energy enters the eye, and through the law of resonance, the information that comes in through the eye resonates brain cells, and brain cells generate perception, the world you see. You can't look out through this antenna. All the eye is, as the other senses are simply frequency receivers. They're just receivers of energy. And whatever energy you have brain cells for, whatever brain cells it resonates in you, the brain, the mind, distinguish between those two because the mind functions through every cell in the body, the mind generates this perception. And it's interesting, there's some Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, that is, there are 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity going on within this structure, in that time frame, which is about a 25th of a second, the max amount of data that goes into building your perceptual world is 9 bits. That's it. You get to see 9 bits out of 10,000 brain cells firing, and it's been estimated that the actuality of the world perhaps contains as much as 20 trillion bits in that same time frame. So we're looking at a tiny, tiny fragment of what's actually happening in the world and a tiny fragment of what's going on within our minds. Now, when you get down to that, what you call this sort of a device is an evidential device. When you're only looking at 9 bits of data out of 10,000 brain cells firing, you're looking at evidence. There are no facts there. There is only evidence. And there's a device, or there's a function of the mind called a bias. And, you know, in electronics, if you've got a, let's say you want to, you've got a transistor, and that transistor is designed to pass a certain frequency. You have to apply a voltage to it that allows that to pass. Well, it's pretty much the same here. You have to apply a a willingness to have certain evidence present itself. And so that bias that is what's contained in literally our whole generational pattern. And as a result, the only evidence we ever get to see is evidence of our own BS. And of course, that's belief system. Anybody else have a different reality for those initials? If you have a different reality for those initials, I'll invite you to notice that's your reality. It's not mine. It's a belief system. I've had people who got, you know, upset with me for writing the initials BS on the board. And notice that they weren't upset because of my meaning, my reality, my perceptual construct for BS, belief system. They were upset and disturbed by a perceptual construct in their minds for those initials. Yeah. All upset is internal. You can't be upset unless you have an upsetting energy within yourself. And if you live in denial, they upset me, then dissociating from that upset, you will project it into your brain's image of someone else, and you know, an endless procession of people will show up being the problem in your life. But you're the only one that was there every time. And when you understand that, these eyes don't see out there, but the world you see is generated from the firing of brain cells within you. Dr. Tim introduced a video by a gentleman, and take a look on, you know, you can go into YouTube and search for Anil Seth, A-N-I-L-S-E-T-H. And he does a beautiful presentation where he informs us that the brain doesn't see light and the brain doesn't hear sounds. No such thing happens. The brain, the perceptual system, is constantly making its best guess about what's going on out there. When you realize that's how your perceptual system works, then, and you realize that perception has a quality, you got to have a standard by which to measure the perceptions you're going to accept and the ones you aren't. There is a sign within your structure that will tell you 100% of the time when your perception is off base. And that is your perception fueled by either hostility or fear? Ever asked earlier, anybody ever accuse you of doing something you've never done or saying something you've never said? You know, most everybody in an audience will raise their hand, you know, kind of a laugh. Yeah, I sure have. Take a moment and think about any time in your life where somebody's done that kind of accusation and they were not correct. What state of mind were they in when they accused you of saying something you never said and doing something you never did, even though they swear they saw you do it? I guarantee it's always hostility and fear.
Yeah.
Now, probably that makes sense to you when you're looking at other people, but notice that you still have a tendency to trust your mind when it's doing hostility and fear. Hostility and fear are indicators that the mind is using corrupt data to build the world that you see. If you come from generations and generations and generations of hostility and fear-based perception, then it seems like that's the only thing possible. Is perceptions based in that. But the mind does not record reality. The mind generates reality. If your mind is generating your reality out of hostility or fear, and remember, this is reality. The perceptual output of the mind is your reality. And what's going on in the world, this 20 trillion bit world, is actuality. When you can let the actuality come in and teach you, well, what are you going to have to do to be able to do that? You're going to have to make a space for it to happen. You're going to have to collapse this projection. Guess what forgiveness does? Is forgiveness about letting other people off the hook because pain or trauma is moving in you? Forget it. Never forgive anybody for anything. And many people say, oh yeah, that's right, I have to forgive myself. Never forgive yourself for anything because you can't. It's not possible. What the Greeks taught us was to let other people off the hook. They taught us pardoning in place of forgiveness and totally bastardized the idea of forgiveness. Forgiveness is the tool with which you collapse perceptions based in hostility and fear, and you leave a clean and open space within your mind for something based in active love to come forward. And when that happens, then what enters into and what fuels the human mind is this state of being that we are designed to function out of. And this physiological device becomes a home where love is incarnated and embodied, and it fuels absolutely everything. So the key tool that's needed, if you recognize that your life has any given arenas, you know, it might be in the arena of relationships or money or business or work or employers, employees, whatever arena it's in, if you find yourself, your mind producing hostility and fear, your job, should you choose to accept it, is to weaken those frequencies of hostility and fear until they can no longer take over your perceptual system. Now, each of us has an innate tendency to perceive life in a certain way. That's because we have generational patterns. Remember we talked about there's integrative energy, there's disintegrative energy. Interesting, in the Aramaic language, the word that describes disintegrative energy is sin. It's an interesting word in Aramaic. The word sin has nothing to do with some terrible, awful thing that you've done. The word sin in Aramaic is actually an archery term. When you picked up the bow and arrow and you fired at the bullseye and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper yelled sin. All it means is you're off the mark. That's all it means. And if I put an energy that's off the mark, some form of hostility or fear, into a cell, I begin the degradation of that cell. Now let's go back to the Aramaic way where they informed us the wages of sin is death. Now, I can remember being a kid and thinking, oh, God's going to get me for my sins. That was what I was taught. You're going to be punished for your sins. And here we live on the punishment planet. How common is that belief? What if we lived on a world planet where 7.5 billion people could not even conceive of punishment, let alone reach out in punishment? What if we had 7.5 people who simply functioned as love and punishment never entered their awareness in any way, shape, or form? How different would our world be? I'm offering a worldview that that's possible, and that's where we want to go with this work. So when they say the wages of sin is death, all they were saying is, if you put disintegrative energy on top of disintegrative energy on top of, on top of, on top of, you're going to die. Your structure isn't going to be able to carry that burden. Literally, mind energy becoming flesh, that chemistry that we call it that lands inside the cell is going to create deterioration of the cell. You get enough cells deteriorating, you get an organ system failing. You get enough organ systems failing and you die. Life can't be supported in a system that is filled with sin. And it's got no connotation of, you know, evil, bad, wrong, nasty. It's just, what quality of energy are you engaging in? And then you remember they said, the sins of the fathers will be passed, yea, unto 3 and 4 generations. This is straight out of scripture, and guess what? It's got nothing to do with religion. It's just the way the system works. It's interesting. I came across this morning some emails from a friend from several years ago, and I'd sent him some of the material and the Beatitudes and the Kabbalah's manuscript, and he passed it on to a business acquaintance. And I just read it this morning, and this fellow is Jewish, and he was putting forward some of Yeshua's ideas in Aramaic, these kinds of ideas. And this guy, this executive from a company he was working with, sent back. He says, what, you and you are talking about Jesus? I'm going to have to sit down and have a few shots of tequila before I read this. Because our world's been brainwashed that this is about religion. And that's just another scam to keep people separated and finding somebody else at fault and not living as their true nature. What this man said is, this is what causes you to die. And you have generations of that in there. Who told you that literally, I mean, you go back four generations, and that's 31 lives. Who told you that you have every thought, every feeling, every reality structured within your structure of the previous 30 people in your generations? Did anybody tell you that? The thoughts, the feelings, the attitudes, the perceptual constructs of mom and dad, and mom and dad's mom and dad, and their moms. Did anybody tell you that? This book called Scripture is not about theology. Here's where it's about genetics. It's about physics. It's about physiology. It's about psychology. It's about how this energy system called life works. But the Greeks didn't want us to know that. You'll notice the Greeks, you know, they had these gods that raped their own mothers, murdered their own children. Pretty heavy-duty group of folks. So through that filter came this insane interpretation of something was just meant to help you to determine how to live your life. So if you've got generations of energies that are off the mark in there, you're in trouble. And of course, you think about 3 to 4 generations, and where did the previous fourth generation back get their thoughts, their feelings, their realities, but from the previous generation and the previous? And so what this work ultimately is inviting you to do, and I'll say that having developed this and worked with this for almost 50 years now, when people are first introduced to this, they get it on a certain level. But it isn't until people work with it for 5 to 10 years that they really grasp what it's about, what it really means. And what we're inviting each of you to do is to develop a skill unheard of in our culture. And that is the skill of being able to delve inside of your own energy system, to learn to collapse projections of untoward energies, move into and literally decode what's in the cell. Literally, that mind energy comes in, lands on a receptor site, is integrated in the cell. The skill is to pull that out of the cell and throw it away. That's forgiveness. And to be able to literally develop the skill to go down to the point where you literally are sensitive enough to the energies contained within your structure that you can go back into the generational patterns and pull the neuropeptides out of the genes that create that pattern, that create this inclination that's activated in certain ways in your life. So we're inviting you to develop a set of skills. And it doesn't happen on day 1 or day 2 or day 10 or day 20. You know, I have people like, you know, oh, I got $5 in 5 minutes. Tell me everything you know, Michael. No, that's not how it works. I use an example of that. And I say this by way of hopefully inspiring you to really take. I'm suggesting you do at least 2 worksheets a day in each assignment as they come, as we go through this intensive. And if you do, through the period of the 14 weeks, you'll integrate it into your life as a habit, and it will become yours for life. That's one of the benefits of doing this intensive this way, as opposed to people coming to Heartland for 16 days and doing it all, but then taking it back to their lives and trying to integrate it into their daily lives. It's a challenge. But ultimately, what we're inviting you to do is to develop the skills of being able to go into the deepest parts of your structure, access what's there and what doesn't belong, to literally be able to throw it away, to remove it. And what does that look like? What are we capable of? And I use an example. Michael J., my son, is a computer nerd. And when he was about 15, he decided he wanted to learn about computers. And I had a student friend in Kansas City who was a former NASA computer scientist. And he's someone that I've worked with for several years. He'd done my work, and we just became buds over the years. And so I called Graham and I said, hey, Michael J. wants to learn about computers, and I know you've got a computer school aside from about four computer businesses. Can Michael come and work with you? He said, sure. And Michael J., of course, was raised at Heartland. And thank you to Fran Tyner, because Fran was this, the first two or three years that we were at Heartland, and Michael J. was, you know, I guess he was about 8 or 9, and he became Fran's tail. He went everywhere Fran went, and Fran would just had this ability to do anything with his hands. So Michael learned that skill from him. And so he ended up going and living at Graham's, in Graham's home, and doing kind of an exchange with him for room and board while he was going to school and studying computers. Actually, over a period of a couple of years, when Michael J.'s stereo system left the house, we knew he'd gone to Kansas City, and that was it. But I tell the story because there was a point where I had bought a new computer. And when I got that computer up and running, got it online, you know, this is back when you pushed the button, it went beep, 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 all these tones, and you got this crawling thing that happened. Well, it didn't work properly. So I called the company, and I don't know, I spent 2, 3, 4, 5 hours on with technical support. They couldn't get the computer working. So I said, well, pack it up and send it back to us. We'll fix it. So I packed it up, sent it back. 2 weeks later, I got the computer back. It's ostensibly fixed. I plug it in. Same problem. Exact same thing. So I got on the phone with the computer with tech support again, go through the whole routine. They can't get it working. So I don't bug Graham because he's a really busy guy. He's got 3 or 4 businesses. And so I picked up the phone and I called and said, Graham, I apologize for bugging you, but I got a problem. Can you help me? And so I explained what had happened, and, you know, I sent the computer back and they couldn't fix it. And, you know, what do I do? It's a brand new computer. He says, okay, well, go to a C prompt. At that point, I was a little bit ignorant of computers. I said, what's a C prompt? And I followed his directions. He said, well, put in a string of letters and hit a return. So I put in a string of letters, hit a return. Read to me what it says. And I read it to him. And he says, okay, type in this string of characters and hit a return. Read to me what it says. So I put that in, hit a return. And I read it to him. He said, okay, your computer's fixed. What? Your computer's fixed. Oh, now, come on, Graham. I mean, I sent it back to them. We've spent hours on the phone. Michael, your computer is fixed. Guess what? My computer was fixed. Now, the company that built the system couldn't troubleshoot what Graham did literally in 3 minutes on the phone. That's called having brain cells for something. Are there challenges in your life? Are there hostilities and fears that you can't seem to overcome? Are there disorders and diseases that just don't seem resolvable? Well, as I said, 5 to 10 years of engaging. And people say, well, that's a long time. I don't know if I want to. Well, what else is there to do? There is no other path to this end result than doing your work. You know, in the ancient times, they wanted an instant fix too. Well, $5, 5 minutes. What did they say to them? You can't storm the gates. You can't do it. It takes doing your work. You have this body-mind unit. There are generations and generations and generations of untoward energies in there. And you've just got to clean it up. Now, I've spent the last half century studying how to do that, how it works, what that all means. And this is my end result. It is actually the thing that inspired me to take it to the next level. My son just turned 40. Was his birth. And when he came into the world, it was just like so awesome, and delivered him, or caught him with my hands. And it was just so amazing. And then I looked at the world at that time, and it's like, well, if somebody doesn't do something, there isn't going to be a world for this little one to grow up in. And this is what I did. And so I invite you to be on the team and be part of the process and key into how this process of healing works, what it really means. And the core of the forgiveness process, we're not actually going to get into doing the worksheet tonight, but we're going to get into what the core of the forgiveness process is. And from there, you can tap into, and you know, you can go to our website, or pardon me, to your phone's app store, and just type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And you'll be looking at the world's, as far as I know, only forgiveness app. You can do the worksheet. There are two different versions of it on that, on your phone now, once you download that. And or you can go to whyagain.org, and in the upper left-hand corner of the page, it says start here. Click that button. It'll walk you through literally 50 years of what it took to understand how this process of forgiveness works. And what I'm going to explain to you right now, I didn't understand until I had worked with this for about 35 years. It took that to decode from the Aramaic and come to understand all of the aspects of how this comes together, the physiology, the physics, the psychology, the genetics of it, and how it all works. But suffice to say, in its shortest form at this moment, perception is the output of your mind. It's made of 9 bits of data. If your perception is fueled by any form of hostility or fear, you have a problem because you are suffering from degraded perception. And your life will never go the way you want it to go while your perception is degraded. Underlying degraded perception is generations and generations and generations, pardon me, our generations of unresolved hostility and fear. The thing that drives this whole process, and you'll notice in your life in general, I mean, unless you're just a naturally nasty person, excuse me, if your persona is that degraded that you're a naturally nasty person, you'll notice that as long as everybody's doing what you want them to do, you're a pretty happy camper. But when someone, yourself or someone else, is not fulfilling a goal that you hold for them, that's when you go into hostility and fear, degraded perception, and untoward behavior. Why? Well, how does all that work? Well, here's what happens. Obviously, if there are 10,000 brain cells firing, and this is the most quoted piece of psychological research, and was done back in the 60s, if I remember correctly, this is the most quoted piece of research in psychological history. 9 bits of data, 10,000 brain cells fired. Now, there's other research that's come up since then that says, no, it's 13, it's 12, it doesn't matter. The point is, we get to see a little tiny fragment of what's really going on within us. And obviously, something has to determine which 9 bits of data your mind is going to use to build your perception. Something has to make that determination. What is it? The driver for that whole process is your goals. When you load a goal in the mind through resonance, everything associated with the frequency of that goal. Remember, everything is frequency. You know, I actually don't speak words. I've never spoken a word in my life, and neither of you. We call it words, but actually, I have a little flap of skin in my throat, and I know how to blow air over it so that it creates these things that we call words. But what's really happening is this air moving out causes air molecules to move. The air molecules moving cause a little drum inside of your ear to move, and that drum moving sets up an electrical frequency, and nothing is communicated by that except frequency. No light, no sound, no nothing goes in there or here. What goes in is frequency. And then that frequency causes brain cells to fire. And now your whole history, including your whole genetic history through the last 1,000 generations, is set into activity through the law of resonance. Whatever that goal resonates in you is going to be the information that is recruited by that goal to produce the perception, which includes attitudes and your behaviors. If you don't like the behavior that you're doing, you know, we hear about the alcoholic that got drunk and did crazy stuff. And the next morning when they wake up, they are so repentant. Oh, that's so terrible. I will never do that again. And they really mean they're never going to do it again. But guess what? Next time they get drunk, they'll do it again. Remember we talked about inhibitors earlier? What's the first thing that happens with alcohol? Excessive amounts of alcohol knock out inhibitors. And now all the generational patterns that were never allowed, they were always shut down, they were always inhibited, will come into play and people do crazy stuff. And much as they feel sorry the next morning and swear they're never going to do it, unless they go in and clean up these generational patterns, they're going to do it the next time the circumstance warrants it. Warrants it. And so goals are the driver for this process of billions of bits of information moving in the world, billions of bits moving in us, and 9 bits end up producing the world we experience, the thoughts we think, the feelings we feel, and the energy we engage in. And this process is designed to be fueled by active present love. That's the power supply that it's designed to work with. Now, does anybody have a device in your home, your office, your shop, your car, your business that works really well when you unplug it? No. Human perception is designed to be fueled by human life. It's designed to be fueled by active present love. If your perception is fueled by hostility or fear, then you're not even human. Just because one has a human form does not mean they are human. Remember holding the newborn? Go back and hold that newborn child. Notice when you hold the newborn, what serenity, what peace, what sweetness, what the presence of love is like. Then ask yourself a question. Is the newborn loving me, or is the newborn love? My offering is, the newborn is the active presence of love, and so are you. If the active presence of love isn't active in your physiology, then there's no human life, because it is love that is human life. Remember Yeshua said, I come to bring you life? You look at his whole body of work, and the whole thing is about how do you get rid of the hostility or fear, and how do you fuel your mind by the active presence of love? Now, it's a two-part process. One part of the process is the dissolution of the generational patterns that do not belong. That's called forgiveness. Forget about ever forgiving anybody ever again. And it always amazes me, because I've had people who have been around my work 10, 15, 20 years, and they'll still talk about how well I forgave them. Stop. Never forgive anybody for anything. If you choose to pardon someone, you know, they did something crazy, and you go, I can let that go. I'm going to let it go. I'll pardon you. I'll let you off the hook for that. That's done. But if you call that forgiveness, you won't actually do the next level, which is go inside yourself and remove and clean up the untoward energies that never belong within a human structure. So forgiveness is about the removal of what never belonged. That's half of the process. And the other half of the process is the integration of active love into every cell. To literally create a space in this form where love actively shows up in physiology. Now, the short form of the forgiveness process, and again, please use the radio show, ask questions. The short form of the forgiveness process is, the word forgive in Aramaic is shebag, and it literally translates from Aramaic to cancel. Now, what is it that I cancel? Do I cancel you? Well, that's murder. Probably not a good idea. Do I cancel myself? Well, no, that's suicide. Let's let that one go. But what in every circumstance where I have upset or discernments going on, that means there's an untoward energy moving in my physiology. If I'm going to come out of my denial, what is it that I can cancel to change that whole process? When I cancel my goal, the perception generated as a result of that goal collapses. When it collapses, I now have a clean and open space within my mind where these underlying energies can surface. Because when I cancel a goal and collapse a perception, what happens is a pathway is open into the unconscious or the dissociated content. And what I've dissociated from, depending on my level of willingness, what I've dissociated from will start to come upward to awareness. Now, when I say awareness, it might just be awareness of the energy moving. And it might be specific memories of things that have happened. It's not necessary to go back and remember each dark, dirty, nasty thing that happened in your life. And it's not about laying on the couch and, you know, examining what happened for 30 years until you find that thing. It's about living in and as the active presence of love, making a commitment to that. And as you walk through life, the next piece of work you're ready to do, resonance will bring somebody to you that will resonate what you need to deal with. If you keep it hidden, then you'll only get this surface projection and you'll think it's somebody else. When you cancel the goal, you collapse that perception. It took me 35 years to learn this piece of information. And I understand why the Greeks turned it into pardoning, letting other people off the hook. I understand it fully, because until you've got all these pieces, you know the physics, you know the physiology, you know the high energy, until you put all those pieces together, canceling a perfectly good goal does not make any sense at all. Gee, I just want that person to cherish me. And they're raging at me. Why would I cancel my need to be cherished? Because I'm in terror. Oh, so my physiology is producing terror because I want to be cherished. Oh, so Michael, what you're saying is what you now understand about me is that in my file on being cherished, there's terror. Oh, okay, I see. So if I cancel my goal for them to cherish me, my projection on them collapses and it opens a pathway into all this terror that's stored within my brain cell structure and maybe the terror that's stored from 30 generations ago that needs to be unwound. Oh, now I'm starting to see what forgiveness is as I cancel the goal. Now, I have a 9-bit processor. That's what we're going to call it for the sake of whatever term we're going to use. If I've got something that's been going on in my bloodline for 25 or 200 generations, and I can process 9 bits at a time, what chance do I have? It's impossible. I mean, it's silly to even try. Fortunately, this man Yeshua understood another major piece of information. And that was that at creation, there was a power put in us that in Aramaic was called Ruka Dekudsha. The Greeks translated these words as the Holy Spirit. It's nothing about a disembodied spirit being in the term Ruka Dekudsha in Aramaic. In Aramaic, those terms speak of a feminine elemental force in us that undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. So when I become willing enough, I will literally, I mean, one of my best examples for, I don't know, 35 years or more. If you were in my workshop 35 years, or, well, 15 years ago, these weren't the words at the top of the board. This word was suppressed. Literally, as I'm sitting and I'm making some changes to the worksheet, and the one you see on the website now or in the app is probably at least version 3020. I was sitting doing some work with it, and literally I'm told inside my head, Michael, it's not suppression. That's not clear enough. It's dissociation. What do you mean dissociation? It's not just that you've hidden it away. It's that it's no longer yours. It's gone. You can't change it. When you understand that denial, thinking or speaking as though something outside of you is the cause of this that's in you, then you have to believe that, hide the real process that's happening inside of you. This genius, Yeshua, genius. I mean, how did he come up with this? I don't know. But here's what he showed us. Cancel the goal. Collapse the perception. Perception drops in on its root. You've now got access to the hidden part of your mind. Bring it forward in the presence of love. And then there's a super processor that is available to you. In Aramaic, it was called Ruka Dekudsha. she, a feminine elemental force in us, that undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. So at the point where I cancel the goal and collapse, I may open so much that I'm so overwhelmed. This is part of the whole flood idea. You know, I'm so overwhelmed. There's just so much to move. How do I do it? I connect with Rukka. What is Rukka? In the original Aramaic, they never said anything about God sending out his spirit. What it says is the creator sent out his breath. We have access to this phenomenal super processor called Rukka Dikuchu. She will, if you invite her to, undo the effects of your errors and teach you the truth. Now, if you've still got a use for one in your lives, well, I just want to keep this little bit of hostility back here so I don't need to protect myself, then she's not going to touch your hostility. It's yours. Hang out with it all you need, all you want. But when you really surrender, when you're ready to really let it all go, she will process you right down to your genetic toast.